Welcome to the Oxley Bond MotoGP podcast.
Everyone, this is the Oxley Bond MotoGP podcast. My name is Peter Bond, and in this podcast, I'm going to tell you all you need to know about the Jerez racetrack, because it's Jerez where this weekend the MotoGP race will be. Let's start with some general information. First of all, it's a typical narrow, old-school European track. Not so much elevation, but it's narrow. With just 11 meters, that's really narrow, of which later more, because it has some serious influence on this racetrack. You know what? It's the track that every rider and every team has spent the most time testing in their lives. So no one is confused, as could have been easily the case at that special racetrack from the last round in Austin, Texas, which was really a weird place to be for all of us. So yeah, Jerez. Believe me, everybody has spent hundreds and hundreds of laps here. Every manufacturer, every rider, even if it's a Red Bull rookie or whatever class you're in, it's always Jerez. But like always, there are some riders that shoot this track better or worse than other places. But, you know, at least everyone knows exactly what's needed here to be fast. Now, the task for the riders in Jerez is to be very precise and quick in their movements while remaining smooth at the same time. And they should not be scared to use the curbs. I mean, a lot, as it's often the case on a narrow track where an extra 30 or 40 centimeters of track can make such a huge difference. And, oh yes, it's also known as an arm pump track. There is no time to rest, and riders tend to stiff up easily here, forcing a bike that won't change direction or not having the timing by yourself of your actions exactly right, it will kill you here. Plus the braking, of which later more. Now, what do we need from the bike in Jerez? Well, for a quick lap around here, the bike needs to accelerate hard from slow corners. It also needs to be able to brake deep into the same slow speed corners. And at the same time, and that's contradicting, it needs to be able to change direction quicksy, easy and quick at the faster stuff. Brakes are on for 11 of the 13 corners, and that in total is a long 34% of the whole lap time. Remember what I said about being an arm pump track? Lots of horsepower doesn't matter a lot for a lap time in Jerez. Sweet quick handling is more important. But, sorry Yamaha, we do need some extra ponies here in order to get past people. Remember, it's a narrow track and they all know it inside out. So the only way to get past riders is to put yourself on the inside before the braking starts. And you know, horses helps here. Overtaking. I mean, that's why we look at the races. Where to overtake? Turn 1. Obviously, but that option comes up if a rider has a better exit from the last corner, mostly. Now, immediately followed by turn 2, because if you don't do it on turn 1, you can set up turn 2, but that's a little bit tricky, because it's downhill, not huge. Like I said, there's not a lot of elevation difference in Jerez, but turn 2 really is downhill, so therefore it asks a lot from the front tire. And since it's also a slow speed corner, it's so easy to lose it. Then we wait a little bit for our overtaking, because then it's turn 6, the end of the back straight, braking down from 300 km per hour to probably even only 65 km per hour. And you know, that always creates opportunities, because people don't have the rear brake set up perfectly, can't stop the bike in time, or you just have a better drive out of turn 5. I mean, if you're planning a move on turn 6, you start it in turn 5. Next thing, turn 9. Is a right-hander, the first of a double right-hander, and because this here just screams, pass me, when you look at it, since the ID line means the door is open for a block pass. Next stop, turn 13, the last turn, because opportunities here arise if a following rider sets up the corner before. That's turn 12, is a really, really fast, it's not even a corner, it's a fast kink, and if you set up that kink very, very well, then you are already on the inside of turn 13. Having said that, these fast kinks can sometimes be a little bit of a problem with current MotoGP bikes, since they depend so much on the aero. Now, let go and join me as we go for a lap around this classic racetrack. Last corner, exit, already very, very complicated and very important for the lap time, because it's a very tight, it's just low second gear corner. It's an hairpin, actually, and we have to be very precise on where we are, where is our body, and exactly which moment we press the button or we switch the lever for the rear ride height device at the same moment as opening the throttle. Low RPM second gear, exiting it at the right moment is so important for the lap time here, and we exit it just touching the curbs there, then bringing the bike, accelerating to the left side of the racetrack, passing really close to the pit boards that the guy's holding out there. fifth gear only. Braking for turn one. What we do here is late, late, late. We learned that in the practice before. You can be really late because not as extreme as Austin, but we brake a little bit uphill. But we also learned that if you overdo it a little bit here, you have to go really, really wide in turn one. So, okay. Braking late, we can probably feel the forks bottoming. Don't worry, we know that. We asked crew chief and he told us, if we avoid bottoming the forks here, you have a fork that's way too hard the rest of the lap. So what are you going to do? It's bottoming, but as long as you're on the straight line, it doesn't matter. And like Pekka Banyaya says, I prefer feeling the tire more instead of having some suspension in the last part of my front fork. So not a problem, but a bit weird as well. Turn one. Now, we let it drive onto the exit. So it's a second gear corner and we're driving in second gear to turn number two, but we don't even go on the racetrack there. Watch closely on television. You might as well forget the whole asphalt between turn one and two because guys don't leave the curbs. It's just usually all about the curbs. You don't leave the curbs from turn one to turn two. Then it's down to first gear. It's again a hairpin, and it's, like I said earlier, it's off camber, so it's so easy to lose the front there. And you got to time your exit very well there. It's not a classic corner. It's almost like you're going to miss it. Really, really, really late, come back into it, make a very late apex point, because after that comes a double left-hander, and you can't exit turn number two completely on the, it's a right-hander. You cannot exit it on the left hand. So maybe the middle of the track is the maximum what you can do in first gear. Bring the bike upright, shift, second shift, immediately third. It's actually a funny place to hear the guys and to watch the guys, because the riders have to be quite forceful and very quickly in how to throw the bike from completely right to completely left, and at the same time ba-bam, short shifting it. So that's turn three. That's just a fast left-hander, closing it a little bit for turn four. I don't think they really brake there. It's more like feathering the front brake a little bit to help it turn, come back. Turn four, you can accelerate really, really harder. And since we are on a fast lap now, we don't give a shit about tire wear. We open the throttle a lot and we're spinning the thing a lot, and we have to bring it back to the left side of the track. Now, watching the track map, you think that's enough time, that's long enough, but it's not the reality. Turn four is so fast that you exit it with a high speed spinning rear tire and you have to bring it all the way back completely to the left to turn five, which is one of the key turns on Jerez because it's blind. Turn five is the highest point of the whole racetrack. So you brake late, turn in, and all the time you think, ah, that could have done faster because, you know, the track sort of comes to you. But once you need to start opening it, it's all about the memory. You have to remember where you need to open it, where to touch the exit, where to go the apex. If you do it too early, you will drive out too wide, and that's really, really scary because it goes to the back straight, and by the time you see where you're going, it's too late to correct it. So it's a very interesting corner. I spent a lot of time there in the past watching how everybody was playing with a rear right high device. You drop it too early, you're in the grandstand. You drop it too late, you lose the drive. So it's a funny place. So we know exactly, because we are professional riders in MotoGP, we learned in the laps before where to drop the lever, where to drop the ride height and open the gas fully. And we know for sure we exit on the curbs, but please, please, please not outside the curbs. Because like I said earlier, it's fast. Now, the back straight drops down, so that's even faster. I mean, MotoGP bikes accelerate. It's like bop, bop, bop through the gearbox, but this one is even worse. It's like when you listen there, you think, ah, that gearing is really short because they just hammer it down the gears. But it's just because the bike dropped down. And our eyes on there are only on the sort of bridge. It's not a real bridge, but we all know the place. We call it the bridge, and that is more or less your braking marker. If you had a really good exit, don't get too over-enthusiastic because you have a better speed, so you can't brake at the same time later. If your exit from turn five was beautiful, be a little bit careful. Don't brake too late for turn six and immediately feel, I mean, from turn six, it's sixth gear all the way down to some bikes maybe first, sometimes some bikes maybe second gear. So we go from 300 km per hour to 65 km per hour. It's seconds, all the load we have on our arms. We have one leg, usually the right leg, dangling on the inside to keep everything in the balance. And, you know, you're not going to be in Jerez, probably. If you are, go to turn six. It's a beautiful place to watch. I've been there on the surface road so many laps because even me, I've seen a couple of MotoGP races. But when you're watching turn six, the last 50 meters, you're sure he's not going to make it. He's just not going to make it. It's too fast. I mean, it's only 50 meters to go and he still has a crazy speed. But these MotoGP bikes now, they can take out so much speed in the last couple of meters, and they have so much confidence and really grip in the front that just when you say, oh, he's not going to make it, he just turns in. And sometimes you see them turning in and the fork is nearly on the bottom, so it's unbelievable. Turn six in Jerez is something special, but it's also hard for us because, you know, we were the riders. And all the time this load on our arms and having just one leg on the bike to support you, it's a lot of load. And you so carefully with your fingers on the front brake, because braking hard is extra difficult for a low speed corner, because the low speed corner means that you have to very, very carefully opening the last couple of millimeters from your front brake pads. That's so delicate process, but it makes the lap time. Having said that, I see people being inaccurate in turn six, where we are speaking about now, and still make the good lap times. Because if you have if you started a bit carefully early, you just make an early apex and you turn it around like on a penny and you fire it out. If you're a little bit over-enthusiastic, you just let it drive out a little bit wider, make a little bit later apex, and somehow it's both possible for the lap time. So we are there with maximum lean angle, turn one, elbow on the ground, in turn six, I mean, in first gear. What we do is open the gas, hit second gear, hit immediately third gear, and turn it immediately back to the left. There comes turn number seven, which was a corner that we never knew it even existed. We never spoke about it in the past because nothing happens in turn seven. Well, not anymore in MotoGP. Started a couple of races ago that we suddenly had a lot of crashes in turn seven, and it's a couple of reasons. The left side of the tire can be, the front tire can be a little bit cold, and it's a tire that we approach pretty quickly, but we don't really brake enough for it to bring all the weight over the front tire. It's more like closing the throttle quickly, feathering a little bit of front brake, and put all your body on the inside. And believe me, the track is very, very narrow there. So it's easy to crash depending, you know, let's imagine you have a hard front tire, it's in the morning, you're going to lose it there. Hard front tire in the afternoon, you're going to need it there. So that's turn seven. And again, from turn seven to eight, it's two left-handers. We don't even go to the tarmac. Like I said earlier, from turn one to two, nobody's on the tarmac there. It's all over the curbs. It's better to be on the curbs and having everything vibrating and moving. But you know, on small tracks like Jerez, it's so, so important to have an extra 30, 40 centimeter of tarmac. It makes the lap times really there. So we're hobbling and vibrating and chattering all the way over the curbs to turn number eight, which is a long left-hander, fast left-hand, and it's also famous for its chatter. So remember, if our bike, in this case, you and me, we are on the bike, we know this bike is a little bit prone to chatter, we brake extra late, keep on braking, a lot of trail braking, and the last part of the trail braking, we might do the famous Rossi trick, already opening the gas a little bit while still braking, to keep tension, keep pressure on the whole chassis, because we know there is one, two little bumps in the middle of turn eight, and they set up a chatter, they set up a vibration easily, and we lose all the drive to turn number nine, because we lose the line. So if needed, remember, while still braking, already opening the throttle a little bit out of turn eight. Now turn eight, I told you we are on a fast lap. We don't give about the rear tire. We accelerate hugely out of it, spinning the rear, helping us turn and come back more or less completely to the left side of the track. Turn nine is a right hand. But depends if we exit turn eight really, really enthusiastic, we don't make it all the way to the left curb. Then just forget about it, because turn nine is a 90 degree and is followed immediately by another corner. So if we don't have a perfect entry into nine, it doesn't matter, because we correct that in turn 10. Turn nine is a crash corner. So it's the left side, it's the right side of the front tire. We didn't brake a lot, a long time there. Like I said, it's a hard front tire. If we are using a hard front tire, then turn nine is one of the places that we easily can lose. It's a slow speed corner, some bumps on the ideal line. If we survive turn nine, we don't lose the front. We let it drift out over the curbs. And now comes one of the brave things of Jerez as well. Watch it on television. Turn nine is followed by turn 10. There's just a couple of meters asphalt in between it, just sort of a couple of 10 meters. And what riders do that are really on a really hot lap, they let it out of turn nine, you go onto the curbs, and while still on the curbs, you throw it on the right side. So turn 10, you start so far left that you're still on the curbs, and you smash the thing on your knee on it, praying that you're not losing it, but you need it. If you have that exit out of turn 10 just a little bit better, you bring all that speed with you on the hard acceleration to 11. So yeah, you see the pattern here. Jerez is all about being very precise and using all the curbs. So turn 10, we enter it on the curbs on the left side, we take the apex in the middle, we let it drift out onto the curbs, and all the way to 11, it's always on the curbs. There's a lot of unused asphalt in Jerez, while I think about it. All the way to turn 11, a lot on the curbs. Smash it on your knee, and that's a tricky one. Turn 11 and 12, These are like, we call them the really special Jerez corners where you make the lap time. It's the last sector. And believe me, the last sector is also the last one that the riders really, really get sorted completely on the limit. Because let's take turn 11. You brake a little bit for it. It's not a corner. It's a kink. It's a very fast kink. And with 11 meters wide, it's unbelievable. It's so narrow in reality. So you gotta be precise in your timing and your movement, but also in the end, the bike just needs to be able to do the turning there. You smash it on your knee and you just pray it turns in time. If it doesn't turn in time, you can't open and you will drift all the way to the curbs between 11 and 12. And then being really late, able to open a little bit, and then again comes 12. So your whole sector is screwed if your bike doesn't turn really, really quickly there. Then it's turn 12 where you... It's another fast kink where you don't need to be very precise. You just need to pray. Because I've seen people losing it in 12. Not a lot, because you don't want to lose it in 12. It's so fast. You're nearly back at your truck at the pit lane. Because the fence there is not that far away. It's fucking fast turn 12. But there's enough time to bring it back in time for turn 13. The last corner, a left-hander. Now, that's a special one as well. Because when you see it, it's quite late. You come from a high lead angle to the right. You start braking, bring the bike upright. And suddenly you see turn 13 appear to you. But still, you need to resist the urge to keep on braking. Because you can be a little bit gentle with the brake, make a late entry, and just by the time you think, nah, not going to make it, you realize that the track has a banking there. It's the one corner in Jerez that has some serious banking, and on a good lap, you need that banking. In a good lap, you go in there faster than is possible without the banking, thinking you're going to lose it, and then the banking sort of picks you up, helps you, and then it's up to you how you finish turn 13. Depends on how your tires are. You make a sort of a V. Of in our case, when we are for the ultimate lap time, you go in completely making quite a sort of an early apex, follow the curbs on the inside on your knee. Don't forget to push on the lever for the rear right high device again in time. And we start the whole sequence again. That was one lap on Jerez. And guys, I hope you enjoyed it. If you do, please leave us some comments on social media or whatever, because it's also a bit of a new thing to us. And we like to make it interesting for you guys. And I hope it was. Now, next thing we go to before we finish this pod is the, I call it race prediction, but it's not really race prediction, basically. That's a shit comment about it. I'm going to say something about the race that we're going to watch on Sunday. And obviously, when I record it, it's not Sunday yet. So it's predictions. I hate prediction because I'm usually shit at it. But I'm pointing at some things that has usually a big influence on the race. And races are usually influenced by the type of tires Michelin brings every weekend. And during last year's race, most riders were setting their fastest laps to watch the end, and with very little variation in lap times over the race time. That was crap for us, the fans, because we often get a lot better races when tire conservation is important, when teams and riders can make a difference with how they treat their tires in order to go the race distance well. So a lot will depend on the type of tires that Michelin brings, and if that makes an extra challenge for them. Otherwise, with the limited overtaking options and a really good tire in Jerez, it's not always going to be a very exciting race. It is usually the excitement in Jerez is a little bit just under the surface, all the pressure, all the intensity, but it's not a race that is where so many times you find all sorts of overtaking. Speaking about the bikes, okay, Ducatis are always fast here. There's not a lot that I need to say. Ducatis are always good here. It used to be the kryptonite, the worst track for them, but already for years in a row, the Ducatis, they love it there. I keep an eye on the Aprilias because their ground effect, we saw how hugely effective Aprilia side fairing ground effect can be in Austin. It can be the same here, especially for the last two fast right-hand kinks that I spoke about. Could be giving them exactly the edge that they need. But if they overdo it, if there is something like a little bit too much ground effect, then the whole action of bringing the bike left and right is going to be too heavy. So it's not a given that every track which has a couple of fast kinks is an Aprilia track. But still, I will not be surprised if in the end it turns out sort of an Aprilia track. And that brings me to KTM. They should be good here. These bikes are nimble and they brake very, 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 very well. Plus, Dani Pedrosa was here testing a short time ago. He even makes a wildcard appearance here. This means he takes it very, very seriously. He still has a big ego. And all that information is going to the other guys there as well. So keep an eye on Pedro, on Dani Pedrosa, but I keep an eye on Pedro Acosta. I don't need to explain why. You know that. So guys, this was it about the Jerez racetracks. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Oxley Bomb MotoGP podcast. We love to hear your comments on this. Be on our social media or on our website, oxleybomb.com. And if you like what we're doing, please consider supporting us. For the price of a cup of tea once a month, cup of coffee, did I say tea? Cup of coffee once a month, you help us keep making this content. We are both in Jerez this week, Matt and I, and the cost of the flights, the hire car, the hotels, etc. Well, let's say it's not become cheaper lately. Anyway, thanks in advance. Our next podcast will be up Sunday night, where Matt and I are both on the ground. Thank you.